but we start the hour by having a conversation with a good friend of the program. He is a reporter and a storyteller for NFL media. He is a Hall of Fame voter. He is author of Junior Seau, The Life and Death of a Football Icon. He is also the co-host of the new podcast, Huddle and Flow. He is Jim Trotter. My man, what's going on, Jim? How are you?
I'm great, Romy. How you doing, man?
Good, good. Great to have you back, Jim. Before I talk to you about football, I do want to ask you, though. I saw you on the golf course yesterday, and you had, Jim, what looked like a vulture hanging out at the tee box with you. How did that go, and how did your round end up going?
It was a turkey vulture who had just, caught its dinner for the evening. And let's just say I left the tee box to the turkey vulture. I was not going to intrude. And my round went well. I mean, I had as many birdies as triples. So for me, that's a good day. So no complaints.
Good to hear it. Jim Trotter, my guest. All right, Jim, I want to get into the details of Russell Wilson and his situation. But before we break that thing down, what do you make of the dynamic right now between the quarterback and the franchise?
You know, Jim, for me, it's not surprising at all. Pete has created a culture up there from the very beginning where he wanted his players to be able to speak their minds. And to me, this is no exception. So it's just that it's taken Russell this long to finally come out and say it publicly. So I'm not surprised at all by this. And in fact, if anything surprises me is that it took this long for Russell to say what he's feeling about the situation.
We're talking to Jim Trotter. So, Jim, what about the situation? You've got Pete Carroll, of course, who's all about a strong running game and a nasty defense, and the sense has been for a while that Russ would like to throw the ball some more and have a little more to say in what's going on with the offense. So how does that play out? I mean, can the two of these guys coexist with these two divergent viewpoints? How will it go?
I think at some point it's going to come to a head, and I think one of them ends up moving on. The reason that I'm not surprised by this, or the thing that has surprised me to some degree, is that I remember having a conversation with Pete Carroll some time ago where he talked about his experience at USC. And he talked about the year that Carson Palmer won the Heisman Trophy and the team finished 500, I believe. And Pete said at that point he never again wanted to have a team that was so dependent on the quarterback that it ended up impacting the final outcome of the team. And so when you saw these things going on with Russell Wilson, and even last year, the first half of the season, where they were throwing the ball like crazy, and Russell was putting up crazy numbers and was in the MVP conversation, I just kept thinking to myself, man, this isn't the Pete Carroll offense or team that I know that he desires. So over the second half of the season, as outlined in that terrific The Athletic piece that was written about this, it indicated all those things that this was not the offense that Pete desires. It was not the style of football that Pete desires. And that's why I say I think it's going to come to a head at some point, because Russell is thinking legacy. Pete is thinking victories and formula and process and all of that. And right now the two of those things don't jive. Russell looks at what's going on with Tom Brady, what, you know, Drew Brees has done, what Peyton Manning did, all of that. And he wants his name to be in that group, and he wants it to be prominently in that group. And one of the ways he believes to do that is by putting up numbers that are insane. And that's why I say I just don't think this thing is going to last long term.
We're talking to Jim Trotter. So, Jim, if it comes down to that, and it's a matter of picking one guy or the other, who's going to win that battle?
That's an interesting question. Look, we all know it's a quarterback-driven league, but Pete has taken teams to two Super Bowls. And what kind of cachet does that give him there? It's interesting, Jim, that the closer you are to Seattle, people believe that it will be Pete who will win that battle. The further away you are from Seattle, the more people think Russell Wilson will win that battle. So I don't know that I have the answer for you on that. I just think that it depends on at what point this thing plays itself out. I do know, or I do believe, I should say, that if Seattle is able to come up with another quarterback that it believes it can win with, then I would say that Pete wins that. If the franchise can't come up with another quarterback, then the odds would have to shift towards Russell.
We're talking to Jim Trotter. You know, Jim, last summer you did a piece for NFL.com where you spoke to a player at each position, and you asked them the three most important qualities of a successful NFL head coach. Richard Sherman told you, quote, Pete has his compete philosophy. He's got a whole psychological aspect that he goes through with, and he's got a routine that he goes through and puts his players through. So what do you make of that, and does Pete's approach get old and wear on guys after a while?
Sure, I think it wears on them to some degree where they feel like what he's saying is not actually what's happening. And for years now, there have been folks who have believed, even Richard, back to his time in Seattle, that Russell was treated differently than everyone else, that Pete was not as hard on Russell as he was on other players, particularly in team meetings. So I think that's what plays on players more than just the message of always compete. And the question becomes, is he being sincere to that message? If he's being softer on some guys than others. So from that standpoint, you know, what Richard said, it's true. And, you know, it's interesting now that we are hearing him come out and speak more definitively about Russell or any flaws that he sees than we've heard at any point during Russell's career. And I think part of that is Russell understanding his position in this league, understanding his talents, his ability, and understanding his power. And one of the things that we are seeing from NFL players today, more of them are being willing to flex their muscle because they are understanding or believing that they do have power. And for a long time in this league, I don't think players believe that, but we've seen that shift over the last 5 to 10 years where I think players are coming into their own in terms of understanding what their power is in this league and what their leverage is in this league.
I think you're right. I think it's a very good point. Jim Trotter is joining us. Jim, something else about that piece that jumps out is the note about Pete and his sons, Brennan and Nate, who were both on the staff at one point before Brennan took a job at the University of Arizona. In a way, it seems unusual, but in the NFL, it really isn't. How concerned then is the league about nepotism and cronyism among coaches?
I don't know how concerned the league is about it. I can tell you that black coaches or minority coaches are concerned about it. Because the reality is right now, Jim, I just got some data this morning, and it's league data, so it's not my reporting from that standpoint. But what it said is that there are 73 coaches in the NFL who are either related to an active or former NFL coach. And of those 73, 55 are white, which some might expect that number to be a little higher. But where it becomes an issue is the feeling is that those hires, nepotism hires, are jumping to the front of the line in terms of getting to positions that typically lead to head coaching opportunities. And so that's a problem. Right now, 10 of the 32 head coaches in the NFL are either the sons, fathers, or brothers of someone who was a former NFL coach. And so from that standpoint, and talking to minority coaches, they feel that nepotism is a huge problem in the NFL at this point as it relates to the advancement of people of color.
We're talking to Jim Trotter. So, Jim, also earlier this week, you had a piece for NFL.com that discussed the fact that in 2020, there were a record number of African-American quarterbacks. There was not a lot of hype around that, despite the history of race being a factor in evaluating quarterbacks. So how would you describe the role that race plays in evaluating quarterbacks now as compared to the past?
Oh, you know, Jim, with that piece, what it was, the way it came about is on our podcast, we were talking to Doug Williams. In week two, prior to the games on that Sunday in week two. And Doug said, do you guys realize that there are four games in which there are head-to-head matchups between quarterbacks who are black? And neither Steve Weiss, my co-host, nor I had even thought about it. And for Doug, it was significant because you have to remember, Doug, back in 1979, when he faced off against Viz Evans, it was the first time in league history that two black quarterbacks had met head-to-head in the NFL as starters. And so for Doug, this was a significant moment. And so I said, I want to reach out to people who were impacted by race at that position historically, whether that goes back to Jimmy Ray, to Sherm Lewis, to Warren Moon, and then to some other guys, Byron Leftwich, Tony Dungy, who had to change positions coming out of college, and just ask them the question of whether or not we have moved past the point of race being a factor in the evaluation of NFL quarterbacks. And to a man, they all agree that progress has been made, but they could not all say that it is no longer a factor. And one of the points that they made is the fact that we still identify quarterbacks by race. We will say, you know, a black quarterback. And they said, until we get past that point, then no, we haven't completely crossed the finish line as it relates to the evaluation. And we're even seeing that in the draft process this year again when you read some of the code language that's being used for a player like Justin Fields. Bucky Brooks spoke to that in my article. So have we moved past it completely? No. Have we made progress? Yes.
My guest is Jim Trotter. Now, speaking of your podcast, Jim, recently you had Terry Fontenot on. What did you take away from that conversation with him, especially when it comes to how he's approaching the offseason with the Falcons?
That they're open for business with that fourth pick in the draft. You know, if they have to use it, they will. But if they can find an offer that allows them to move down and get, you know, more picks and supplement that roster, or if there's something there, the player that they believe they really want, and there's an opportunity to move up, it's in play. You know, Terry is the type of guy, he's not going to show his cards. One of the things he will tell you is that he listens to every interview that's done. He reads every story because he said people around the NFL have loose lips and you can gain a lot of information from that. So he wasn't going to tell us much, particularly when I pressed him and said, are there any untouchables on your roster? And he basically wouldn't answer that. He danced around it. So from my standpoint, Terry Fontenot, I think, is going to be tremendous as a GM. He's so smart. He works hard. And he's thoughtful in terms of his approach to things. So I'm really interested to see how ultimately that is going to play out in Atlanta, because I do think he's one of the bright minds in the game.
I'm talking to Jim Trotter for a few more moments. Jim, what about the Texans situation and Deshaun Watson? He's made it pretty clear, this is not where I want to be. I'm not going to play for a new head coach, and this is not handled well. I mean, he's in a really, really unhappy place, it would appear. How do you think that plays out?
I think at this point they're going to test him. I think it's a game of chicken, and they're going to see just how serious he is about not wanting to be there. Look, part of the reason during the interview process, they made it clear to the candidates that they wanted to retain Tim Kelly as their offensive coordinator, which they did. And part of the reason for that is, my understanding from talking to people, is they believe that this situation with Deshaun could drag out until even week one. And they felt that if he came back in week one, they wanted to have an offensive system and a play caller in place that Deshaun was comfortable with, and that's Tim Kelly. Deshaun had his best season under Tim. So from that standpoint, that's what they've done. Having done that, I believe they're going to play this out, and I don't think they're going to trade him. Teams that I've talked to that have at least made the call to Houston to inquire about whether or not the Texans are willing to move Deshaun have gotten a firm no, if they've gotten an answer at all, you know, gotten their call returned. So from that standpoint, at this point, I expect Deshaun to be back in Houston. And look, we know this, Romy, based on history in this league. Deadlines spur action. And when players start to lose money, that's when we find out what they're really all about or how strong their convictions are. And I think the Texans are willing to test that with Deshaun.
So obviously you don't want to have an unhappy player. If they don't move him, and he's always been the ultimate soldier and team guy, what kind of a mindset and headspace would he be in if they don't move him and he does have to show up?
I'm betting not good. I mean, in stating the obvious. But I will say this to you, too. Since when do teams care about a player's mental mindset in many cases? You know, I do believe this, and I don't have any evidence of this, so hear me out on that. But I do believe there are owners in the league that are saying at this point, look, these players are getting a little too full of themselves. They're starting to feel that they have too much power. And I would not be surprised at all if there have been owners who have said to Cal McNair in Houston, look, you need to get a hold of this because we need to get these players under control and not give them that perception or belief that they have more power than what they do. I have no proof of that. I just believe that based on the history of this league and the way things work. And I would not be surprised if those conversations have taken place with Cal McNair.
Yeah, I would not doubt that either, Jim. Now, when I see you on video these days, you look like a million. How is the Peloton treating you, and what is the secret, my man?
Romy, actually, I've gotten too skinny on this thing. I'm down 25 pounds,
wow,
three pant sizes, and I'm actually trying now to put a little weight on, or muscle mass, if you will. I stopped lifting and all of that and just started riding the bike and doing core work, which is great. It got some of the weight off and all of that. But the problem is now I'm too skinny. And, you know, I feel like I'm wearing my father's suits when I put on my old clothes. So I had to go out and buy some new clothes. And, you know, that gets expensive. So I'm just trying to find a happy medium at this point. But this is the life of the pandemic. I haven't traveled. Next month will be exactly 1 year that I have not gotten on a plane or gone anywhere. And for the most part, you know, it's been stay at home, ride the bike, do some core work, that sort of stuff, and try and find an escape from the madness that's going on.
Man, that is the pandemic life right there, summed up perfectly. He is a reporter and a storyteller for NFL Media. He is a Hall of Fame voter and the author of Junior Seau, The Life and Death of a Football Icon. Also, check out that great podcast, Huddle and Flow. Jim, great to have you on. Appreciate you, as always. Thank you very much.
Romy, always a pleasure, man. Look forward to it.
Me too, Jim. Thanks. Great talking to you. Great job by Jim Trotter. And what he says about Deshaun Watson, I think is true. I mean, Watson does not want to be there. This is clear. He does not want to be there. But deadlines do spur action, and guys do not want to lose money. And if they're not going to move him, and they start to fine him, and it costs him game checks, I don't think it comes to that. I don't think he's going to be happy. But I don't think that he would sit out the entire year to get what he wants.